Hi, I'm Bonsu.
I'm Bryn.
And I'm Nick, and this is Chalk It Up, a podcast that celebrates all things Sussex through stories and conversations with inspiring local people.
In this episode, we talk with Sussex builder Jules Baker, who specialises in the use of natural sustainable building materials. Jules shared stories of growing up in Lewes in Sussex, how he first got involved in natural building, and what inspires him to try to make a difference. We hope you enjoy listening.
When did you first start to get an interest in natural building?
So building is kind of in my DNA, kind of come from a building family. So my dad's been a builder all his life, still going, kind of nearly in his 80s and still working. So I started working for him originally when I was about 14, kind of doing summer holidays and always kind of around it, always liked the buzz of a building site. And then did a couple other things. Used to work at the Snowdrop, kind of that was my first like full-time job when I was 18 after college. I covered a makeshift to help him out, then ended up staying there for about 2.5 years. Yeah, so I was the manager of the Snowdrop when I was 19, which is absolutely mental now. Like, why they give a 19-year-old keys, I don't know, but we had some good fun there. A lot of good fun there. Yeah, good nights.
They had a lot of friends then.
Yeah, it did. It was nice, actually, because there was always a bit of a trek down there, so okay. A lot of my mates used to come down at the end of the night, and then we'd have a lock-in. Nice. So from that, like, I didn't just go out of the pubs. I was never going to work in the pub all my life. And actually, I've got an opening. My dad's labourer at the time, he was leaving, and I knew he was leaving. So I just started labouring with him, doing a bit of work. And then it was actually my dad that encouraged me. He said, if you're going to work, go and do an apprenticeship. Don't just be a labourer. Kind of helping out, sweeping up on site. I was working with the bricklayers at the time. Loved that side of it. Loved being outdoors. And went and did a brickwork apprenticeship. And that then kind of started taking me, I suppose, started looking more into what I would have called sustainable building at that time. Looking at more kind of how's the best way to recycle, and that's what I was seeing, like the big waste within the building industry, because there was always just stuff getting thrown away. It was some quite big jobs, and then I actually met a client who was a lovely lady. She was living in Lewes. She's actually moved to North Wales now. She introduced me to hempcrete. I was doing a project with her, and I'd never even heard of the product. But I was wanting to build more in line with my values and kind of doing my own research and working out how. And, found out about hempcrete, and that really just took me down the rabbit hole of natural building. So people then know it's like a hemp and lime mix. It's a bit of a wonder building material. I had been doing a bit of lime more to work, and, we're fortunate enough to live in a conservation area. So in Lewes, a lot of the brickwork, the flintworks, all kind of lime mortar-based. So I had a bit of a background in that anyway. But then, just learning about hempcrete, it was like my mind was blown, just how amazing that product was, how fast the hemp grew, the properties of hempcrete, the health benefits for the occupants, for the builder. I just thought, why isn't everything built with this? So, I kind of had that like mind-blowing hempcrete moment. And then from that, just started learning more about natural material and fell in love with it, fell in love with it,
So you're working for your dad at the time, is that right?
So, no, I wasn't working with my dad at this time. So I did my apprenticeship with my dad and then went and self-employed and started doing...
So working for yourself.
So I was doing my own projects with some other builders. I was working for a builder in Brighton for a couple of years and then... I was back in Lewes doing a job for myself at the time when I met this client.
Right.
Yeah.
So you're working for yourself, you've discovered hempcrete.
Yeah.
And you're sort of aware of the things that sort of have impacted you.
Yeah.
In terms of what you noticed, which is the waste, the construction waste.
Yeah.
And wanting to do something in a more sustainable way.
Yeah.
What did you then, where did you go with it then? What was your next step?
So my next step, because I was working for myself, self-employed, working with other builders, and it's in like the good side of the building industry. I loved my job. I loved working outside. I loved working with other people and the camaraderie around that. I loved going to different sites and every job being unique. I didn't like a lot about the industry. I didn't like you said, the waste. I didn't like the toxic materials that we were using, because my awareness had grown around that. And I suppose just my consciousness around the planet, the environment, was getting heightened at this point.
Yeah.
So from that, I always thought I was going to have my own building company at some stage. And I started Kind Construction off the back of that, through my love of natural materials and wanting just to treat people the right way and wanting to kind of make a bit of a change in the industry and actually bring a bit of kindness and consciousness to the building industry.
Mm-hmm. So what was different about Kind Construction?
It was a building company based on like three core values of positivity, sustainability and kindness. We kind of led everything we did with those three core values. Mm. It was from how we wanted to treat the people that worked for us, the people we worked with, just wanting to bring a real good, positive site environment. A lot of the sites I worked on previously, they were pretty toxic in many ways, not just the materials, just like the toxic masculinity that kind of came with building. Mm. And the, like the site banter. We got away from all of that Kind Construction, started the day with a big hug and some gratitude and wanting to is really build in a more sustainable way and just showing that the industry could change. And really proud of our work with Kind Construction, because I think we've actually now started a little bit of a wave throughout Lewis. I'm seeing other builders now take on more sustainable building practices.
One of the things that really stuck out for me about Kind Construction.
Yeah.
I know you had the sustainable angle.
Yeah.
But more than that was the kind approach of your attitudes and the way you promoted behaviour of a builder. Because there's a culture in the building industry.
Yeah, absolutely.
Of what's of how it's acceptable to behave.
Yeah.
And I think I'm sure there are plenty of people that are naturally like that.
Yeah.
But I think that there's a lot of other mainly men, and it is, who get caught up in it.
Yeah.
Who just think it's acceptable. So they join in that sort of behaviour.
Yeah.
What was your opinion on that? And I think it's quite a brave thing to do.
Yeah, well, that was a big driver to start it. Because it's never been part of me, or to be fair, I know growing up in Lewis a lot to do with that, because me and my friends, we never took the piss out of each other. We were actually always really nice to each other and really kind, and I didn't know that was unique until I was in my 20s and then saw how other groups of males interacted with each other.
Right.
Which I thought was really fascinating. Georgina, my partner, she was kind of the groups of boys that she grew up with and went to school with and kind of all around South Croydon, and they just take the piss out of each other constantly. And I think that kind of growing up in that environment then leeches out into like the workplace, doesn't it? Whatever that may be, whether it's an office or a building site. I think building sites are particularly bad for it because, as you say, for some weird reason, it's considered acceptable and part of the culture when it just shouldn't be at all. So I think growing up in Lewis and being around like good, positive people, I love my mates. I wouldn't ever want to take the piss out of them. I can give them a big hug every time I see them and like show them the love that they deserve. And then, like I said, working with my dad and in a smaller kind of family setting. And then I went off by myself and then I was working on some fairly big sites kind of in and around Brighton, where I really saw that like toxic masculinity side of it, the banter side of it, where people thought it was acceptable to take the piss out of each other. No one knows what's going on in other people's circumstances. And I just didn't want anything to do with that, really. I worked for a firm for about 2.5 years and I was always a bit like on the edge, you know, around lunchtime, like just seeing people generally not actually being that kind to each other. And I just thought, this isn't right and we should be doing something different about this. So, yeah, that was a big driver, just to kind of create a culture of love and kindness on the building site. And I think we really achieved that. The people that we had working with us, they all fully embraced it. And we kind of went for a values-led approach with the people that we employed or had working with us.
Do you have any resistance to what you were trying to promote? And not necessarily from staff, but from other contractors. How did they react?
Not that I've openly known about. I'm sure there's probably quite a lot of comments behind closed doors, but not that I've openly known about that I can say, so no. You might have heard differently.
No, I haven't actually. No, I just always felt that it was a very noble and brave thing to try to do. Because I think that there are plenty of contractors who feel the same. I think even some contractors probably don't want to tell their staff not to swear.
Yeah.
Because it's not part of the culture.
Yeah.
You know? Did you have any difficulties with staff at all?
Absolutely. I think most of the staff, though, as I said, because we went with that values-led approach, I think most people got it. There was a couple of people that maybe someone that was working with us brought either a family member or a friend within to Kind Construction, and quite quickly we worked out that it wasn't really going to work with that person because they had to fully embrace the values. Because even like you said, then we had a culture of no swearing on site, no smoking on site, which is quite radical for a building firm. Swear words, I'm sure, came out every now and again, but we didn't open it. We discouraged it, obviously.
Sure. No sexism.
No sexism. But I think that was just a given. I don't know. We never had a female working directly for us. We had trade partners that were female, and it was something that would have been great because there's not enough women in the building industry. I think if there were more females within the building industry, we wouldn't have that kind of toxic culture around it so much.
And they're another brave bunch as well, I think.
Oh my god, yeah.
Women that are getting involved in construction.
Yeah, absolutely.
What about materials then? Should we talk about sustainable materials and techniques? What are the materials and techniques that excite you the most? You've touched on hempcrete.
So I'll just go back a bit because we've been talking about Kind Construction, and so we've kind of operated as Kind Construction for about 4 years, and I've actually now transitioned out of that. I don't know if you were aware, just because of, number one, not wanting to be a main contractor anymore. We're talking about materials, which led me onto this. It's really just to focus on our passion, or my passion, of the materials I love. Because what I was doing with Kind Construction was more project management, and I was actually getting away from the materials I love. So I love working with clay, lime and stone. They're like my favourite natural materials. Like I said, I did a brickwork apprenticeship, so I was always more led to the wet trades. They're the ones that interested me. So where I now work with clay, I work with still clay-fired bricks, ideally handmade wood-fired or reclaimed, and then clay plasters, clay floors, clay blocks, which I think is a real kind of underused material, actually. And I could talk about them for another 10 minutes, please. But they're a structural load-bearing clay block with clay and straw. They're just so simple and really effective. And then the lime side is just lime plasters, lime mortars, really things that we should be using in our homes, much more for like conservation and renovation work. And most of Lewis and Brighton, kind of all pre-1920s, was all built with lime and lime plasters. And I just think that kind of building physics and the building science has been lost. We got built really well for thousands of years, hit the Industrial Revolution, cement, and then gypsum with additives came into building, and buildings were really poorly restored. Modern buildings are slightly different, but it's the restoration and conservation of these older buildings that have been used with more kind of modern, or what we know now as more conventional material. So the gypsum and cement, as I say, they've just caused damp and damage to the building's fabric. So, yeah, I like using lime in that setting just for the restoration work. Yeah, it's a great material. It's local. It's abundant. And then stone. Yeah, stone's just a fantastic material and it's underused. Again, there was a real culture of building with stone for thousands of years. And I think people now have kind of almost gone away from it a little bit. There was a big push to use bricks, which again, they're great, carbon intensive, where stone performs that same role, but has no embodied carbon or very low embodied carbon because it can be quarried and cut locally and then used as a replacement for things like steel, which are really high carbon impact materials. And that takes me back to like the other natural materials I mentioned earlier, like clay and hempcrete. Mm-hmm. Why I love building with them, because then you're kind of taking the life cycle of the building into consideration there. Because a hempcrete building, for instance, is hemp and lime. And especially if you've got like a clay plaster on that, at the end of that building's life cycle, that can be demolished. It just goes back to the ground. It's compost. It's fantastic for the earth again. So, yeah, there's the two sides of the story with the stone that is completely pure, is natural, lasts forever. And then there's the regenerative side, like the hemp, and comes from the earth and can go back to the earth.
How does the customer,
yep,
who don't know anything about building work,
yep,
how do they take your approach when you've gone in? Do you usually get individuals that are aware of the builder material, or do you tend to go for the mainstream and then and actually talk to customers about your material?
So there's been a bit of a shift on how we've worked. So at the beginning, like the early days of Kind, people would come to us saying, I want a natural or sustainable build. And they'd have a set of plans, for instance, that maybe were primarily done with conventional building materials. And when I say conventional, I'm thinking like gypsum and cement and what you'd expect to see in modern houses. And then we were making little adaptations and tweaks to make it more natural or sustainable. By like the end of 4 years of Kind, people were just coming to us solely for that, because I think they knew what we did. Mm. Now I've transitioned to the new business, which is Unearthed, because of the fact that there's lots of people wanting now to build with these natural materials. Mm. I think the public awareness has heightened. So we're now kind of able to have a bigger impact working with lots of different builders. Mm. So we're kind of now subcontracting and doing those special, like specialist natural material parts of the job. So yeah, I think the public's awareness generally around natural materials has risen. Combination of things, I suppose, things like the internet, podcasts and Instagram. It's, the start of my natural building journey, the information just wasn't there. The internet progresses things really quickly, actually, doesn't it? And yeah, things aren't podcast as well. Yeah, people listening to this might not necessarily have an interest or know anything about natural material, but now they can listen to it and tell a couple of other friends, and it has quite a big impact, actually.
Loads of kind of public bodies have targets around aspirations around becoming carbon net neutral by 2030.
Yeah.
A lot of those happen to be planning authorities as well.
Yeah.
So presumably natural materials are going to play a really big part in that.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Because most of the natural materials are either carbon neutral, and some of which, a lot of the hemp products, they're claiming to be carbon negative just because of the hemp sequesters so much carbon as it's growing.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Hemp, being a bit of a wonder plant, it grows kind of 2 meters in 90 days, and then an acre of hemp would sequester four times as much carbon as an acre of forest, for instance.
Yeah.
So if we can utilise that and use it as a bit of a carbon sink, and then it's a regenerative material,
which we can build with and grows really well in like the local climate, it's a bit of a no-brainer, really. It's just the industry's not quite caught up, I suppose.
Yeah. Do you think the industry will? Do you think? And what's happening in sort of other countries? What stage are similar countries to the UK at with it?
So take hempcrete, for example. The rest of Europe's quite a lot far ahead, like further ahead. So France, for example, has got about 30,000 hempcrete homes. The UK had about 3,000. So they're here. And the Netherlands, again, is like well ahead. Italy's really catching on. They're making a lot of hemp products there at the moment. And then the States and Canada are kind of catching up. They're just a little bit behind us. But that was one good thing that Trump did, actually, was kind of deregulate the licensing around hemp growing and manufacture. Yeah.
No way.
Yeah, well, he just saw the financial value in it, I suppose. So, yeah, made it a lot easier for farmers and growers. So that actually gave the industry a big boost in the States.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
And you mentioned the health benefits to someone living in a house, people living in a house made of hempcrete.
Yeah.
Can you say a bit more about that? What's the...
So hemp and then the lime that it's kind of encapsulated in hempcrete, for example. So then if you've got a lime plaster or a clay plaster as well on top of that, they're really good at managing moisture. So they're hydroscopic materials. So when indoor, like relative humidity rises, they absorb that excess humidity and then slowly re-release it. So, and then especially kind of around like lime products as well and clay, it means that bacteria, viruses, mold can't grow. They can't live in that environment because we've got the relative humidity under control.
I'd no idea about that at all. Mold's become such a big issue recently, hasn't it?
It has.
Why has it become more of an issue?
Because just buildings have been poorly restored or poorly built in the first place without... we've kind of got a culture of sealing buildings rather than having them like vapour open. Hmm. So where natural materials are all kind of vapour open, they allow for the passage of moisture to move through the material. Hmm. We've got some weird building mentality where we want to make everything watertight. And then it just seals and traps moisture, and then inevitably mold grows in it because you're getting a cold spot where moisture will hit and mold will grow. So yeah, mold's really bad for health. Mm. There was obviously that horrible case last year.
Yeah, I think it was last year.
So I think like there's a bit of public awareness around that now, where natural materials that doesn't happen because it controls the relative humidity, and they can't grow. Also, around the health, there's no VOCs. They're natural materials. Modern materials, even like gypsum plaster, for example, the gypsum itself, there's nothing wrong with that in its form. Like a gypsum plaster in its raw form, it's fine. Gypsum's a natural material. It's the additives that they put in with the gypsum that give it a chemical set reaction, which then off-gas and leach VOCs into the environment. Same with paints. Most plastic paints, they're full of VOCs. You're breathing those in all the time. They're not good for human health. We actually just make really toxic environments for people to live in. It's really backwards. Mm. But natural materials, they cause no harm. They're good to be in. You go into a house built of natural material, and everyone, I guarantee you, goes in and does a big exhale. It's going to go, because it's clean air with the, one of my clients described it as going into your house and giving it a big hug, like hugging a tree. Yeah. They described it, which is nice. It's a really nice way. It's like, it's how we've evolved. We've evolved to be as part of nature. And then we've just kind of, in the last kind of 100 years or so, stuck ourselves in little sealed boxes and just separated ourselves from nature. We're bringing the natural materials into the home. We're back as part of it. That's how we've evolved. Humans evolve around clay. We've got a real special connection to clay. And I could talk in that in more detail, but
that's what I'm
doing. Yeah, it's, again, we literally evolved around clay. For thousands of years, we grew up in, lived in clay huts, floors. It's got very similar, like, electrical properties to the clay, to the kind of, I don't know the whole science behind it, so, but the electrical charge of clay is very similar to the human body. Mm. So, like, earthen floors are amazing. So you stand on a clay floor, and, yeah, it just does good things to your body. Mm. It's, yeah.
It's a lovely thing to touch, clay, isn't it?
Yeah, I love clay. Well.
So
yeah.
I know exactly what you mean.
It's really, really
nice. The temperature
nice.
Of it is... Mm. It's,
yeah.
It's the texture.
Yeah, we've got a special connection to clay, and it's... Mm. It is. It's an evolutionary thing that I don't think people could really put their finger on, but it's just been a part of human society for so long because we have built with it. And again, pre-industrial, like, there would have been clay buildings and earth buildings in Lewes or Sussex, but then it was kind of considered a bit of a pauper's thing, and they got knocked down and brick buildings got built. Brick buildings are obviously still clay, but it was then fired clay, and it was, like, the more prestigious thing of that time.
What do you think went wrong with the introduction of some modern building materials? Not all. But some, particularly the VOC containing, chemical containing hard cements and plasters.
I think it's profit margin and speed. People want things happening now. A lot of natural materials, like lime, traditional limes especially, you're kind of plastering a room in a traditional lime putty, and it can take you 2 weeks, depending on the time of year. You put your base coat on, you leave it a week, you put your top coat on, where you can do it with gypsum plaster in half a day. So, yeah, everything's to do with speed now, and then getting the next person in, getting the next trade in, trying to get a job done in the shortest amount of time possible. Big part of it was... I'm not sure the exact history of it, but there was a time where we swapped... It was basically when the income... tax got put on labour because it didn't exist, and then when the income tax got put on to labour costs shot up quite dramatically. So then everything to do with construction was all about saving man hours on site.
Sure, yeah,
makes sense.
I can't remember who brought that in. It was like a king in not too distant history.
So what I want to find out is, if I was a customer and how would I approach, or how would my thinking change from using the natural material, or from using what you call currently what people are using to build, most builders use, as compared to using your one.
Yeah.
So what will make me change? Is it going to be looking the same? Is it going to be almost making it like a nice thing to talk to your friends about?
Yeah.
Or is it really going to have a real impact on what, you know, health and everything else I'm looking to do?
I suppose it comes down to the individual and where they place their value, because if you're placing your value in yours and your family's health, then, like, that's a big win and a big sell for natural material. Mm. If you're placing your value in trying to get the job done as quick as possible, you may compromise on some of the natural material side. But there are really good companies doing quite groundbreaking things now, because... as you say, not everyone has the luxury of waiting 2 weeks to get a lime plaster done. Mm. So there's a Bristol-based company at the moment who are making, like, a quick set lime plaster. So you can get two coats done in a day. So it's making natural materials more commercially viable. And they're also, they're trying to make, like, smooth finishes, which most customers are more accustomed to as well. So, yeah, there is kind of more technology. And again, like anything as well, as the demand goes up, there'll be more research and development around that. Yeah. So there's going to be loads of other companies trying to do cool things to try and bring natural material into people's homes. I know that people are working on like SIPS panels, so and modular construction where it's built off-site and then assembled. Kind of that brings down the labour time and the man hours on site quite considerably. So I think that will be more commercially viable to the typical consumer, I suppose. And then, yeah, it's, I think, like you say, the finish is one thing that people have just been accustomed to as well. Everyone likes that kind of smooth gypsum finish look in their house, which is a really nice finish. I completely give it that. I'm not kind of completely against the gypsum plaster finish. It's just not for every building, I suppose. And yeah, and as well, I think this kind of wave of natural building that we're seeing at the moment will make the people that are making the traditional or conventional materials, they're going to start thinking twice. Like, there's low carbon cements coming out, and will they perhaps think of maybe the gypsum not having the same kind of chemical set, because it's most injuries are consumer led, aren't they, really? So
I just following up from that, I mean, obviously if you had a message for, or you know, if you basically thought you had the power to make a real change, what are some of the key things you would have actually done or said to make people aware of that? Because for me, this is the kind of the first time I'm hearing about it. I mean, I don't know if I'm alone in this scenario, but I'm sure most people will be to actually think how, you know, hemp, you know, can be used to build. So what would you have done? You know, I know you mentioned Trump and what he did. What do you think we need in this country?
Oh, I think more large-scale developments and councils and building control really kind of giving backing to natural materials and showing that there is an alternative. Because, like I kind of touched on earlier, the whole time that developments run on a capitalist structure where it's all about getting the bottom line and getting the development done as quick as possible, there's got to be kind of some more incentives perhaps to developers or house builders to build in a more natural or sustainable way. You know, Bryn, you touched on people having to reach targets for 2030 or 2050, kind of, which is probably going to move at some point as well. But maybe if there was more incentive for builders or developers.
They're quite energy driven, aren't they, targets?
They are.
Construction.
Yeah.
And that may be something that could change to have other ways of measuring sustainability.
Yeah, completely agree.
Just purely about energy use.
Yeah, completely agree. Carbon is always seems to be like the main focus, not on like health of the occupant or what we're actually doing to like rivers or waterways or mining practices or the actual supply chain of how the materials have got to us. That's quite often overlooked. And I think it's probably too broad for people to kind of really get their head around. So like carbon seems to be like the one sole enemy, where there's probably like an eightfold thing of how we actually, because it's a climate and ecological emergency. You're exactly right there, Nick. It's very energy driven. And that's where I think most people, if they think of like eco building or green building, would think putting some solar panels on the house or an air source heat pump maybe. And kind of probably go in from that energy focus. And I've seen other builders doing that as well, because I think that's probably quite a good starting point. But then you see the starting point of kind of making energy reductions, and that's like where like the whole passive house movement started off with real good intentions, and then I think people have realised that that's actually, there was a lot wrong with that movement because it was so energy driven and getting a just getting to the house at such a standard that it didn't need any energy to require the running of it or the heating of it, that it was actually, they were built with quite toxic materials. They were quite often loads of concrete and petrochemical insulations, which are dreadful for the planet. Like the petrochemical insulations, when they're made, they're just here forever. Mm. There's a mycelium that they've found now that's actually will degrade the petrochemical insulations. Because until now, if you make a petrochemical insulation, it's just here. It's here forever, basically. Mm. And then, you know, they're used everywhere. They're all over in every house across the country. As soon as you cut them, they're in people's lungs. They're slowly killing the builder and then the occupant from off setting the VOCs. And then they're getting into waterways. They're awful. But yeah, they're now making, they've discovered a mycelium that will break down the petrochemical insulations, and then they can make that mycelium into new insulation.
So could you explain what mycelium is?
In a very layman's way.
That would be perfect.
Yeah, it's the it's essentially like the root network from fungi, and it creates a network under the soil. And yeah, I think we're just scratching the surface of mycelium at the moment, or scientists are, and they believe, from my understanding, it's kind of how trees and plants can communicate as well and share information and share energy and resources. It's basically like a big web under the soil.
It's formed like a neural pattern, isn't it? Like the brain. And it sends electrical signals along, and that's how they...
Incredible.
I've read about that.
Yeah. It's almost like the Earth's brain.
They're growing this stuff, aren't they? And they're making it into insulation.
Yeah. So there's a London-based company who seem to be leading the way. They've hit a few roadblocks by the look of it. They originally said the insulation was coming to market, I think it was like February 2021, and it's gone a little bit quiet. So I don't know what kind of roadblocks, or if like the big insulation suppliers are like paying the right people maybe to keep it quiet for a bit, because once that hits the market, it's a complete non-brainer. It's a natural material that's outperforming what they're claiming at the moment anyway, outperforming the petrochemical insulations, because that's the biggest hurdle as well, actually, for us on the natural building side. Those petrochemical insulations, from an insulation standpoint, they work really bloody well. Just from an insulation standpoint, to meet a specific kind of U value or R value in a building, they're great. They do their job really well.
As long as you don't leave any gaps around.
As long as you don't really leave any gaps. And that's...
And most do.
Yeah, most do. And that's the thing. Most people are actually kind of missold that dream, because building control, or an architect, for instance, they might meet this U value to say we're going to use this petrochemical insulation, but then as you say, Nick, they leave a 2 mil gap, and I think a 2 mil gap in like a Celotex insulation reduces performance by about 20%. So it's, and everyone leaves a 2 mil gap because they're horrible to work with. Everyone's just trying to get done as quick as possible because they don't want it going in their eyes and their lungs.
So for going back to our listeners who will maybe not working in a building. So can you explain in a layman's term what the hempcrete or the lime, what really it is, where you get it from, how it will look like when you've and how can you spot it? And just so that there can be a feel to it, because it sounds a little bit quite niche.
Yeah, absolutely. So again, to kind of combat that, so hemp in itself is a weed, essentially. It's like a cousin of the marijuana plant. That's why it's got kind of a bit of a stigma around it. It's completely separate. It's not psychoactive. It does produce CBD, which is now used for medicinal purposes. So I think the knowledge and the growth around the medicinal part of the plant, that's only going to really boost the building industry, because so essentially the hemp plant is grown, like I said, it grows about 2 meters in 90 days. The flower is taken for medicinal purposes. The outer stalk is made for like clothes, textiles, rope. And then you're left with like the inner core of the plant. So if you imagine it's kind of like a circular core, that's called the shiv. Typically, it was never used for anything. It's been used for like animal bedding. They rediscovered in the 80s that a lot of like the old French cottages, like the French timber frame houses, were made with hemp and lime. So it was French builders in the 80s when they were restoring these buildings. They rediscovered hempcrete. It was used quite a lot in the 16th century in France. So that's why the French are a little bit ahead of us as well in their building knowledge of hempcrete. So then when it's kind of arrives at a building site, you basically get a big bag of wood chips. You mix it with lime, which is like lime in a powdered form. You can mix it in a traditional kind of cement mixer, or you get a big forced action cement mixer, mix it with the lime, and then that's why it kind of got coined as hempcrete, because it's the closest comparison is concrete, I suppose, where it would be bits of aggregate and sand and cement, and you pour it out. It's that similar kind of look, so it's... But it, yeah, it's literally just the hemp plant and lime. But as I was saying, with people making it more accessible, there are companies now, there's the hemp block company over here, that are bringing in hemp blocks. So they'll look like your traditional building block, so it's not so daunting to your conventional builder. So you can just build it like you would a concrete block wall or a lightweight block wall, put it, but you use a lime-based mortar rather than a sand and cement-based mortar that you would with kind of conventional block work. And I think it's those changes now, like seeing it in a block form, that's where we're going to start seeing it used more by mainstream builders, because it kind of takes that woo and the mystery out of it. It's just a block. Most builders know what a block is. So, yeah. And then, yeah, when it's in your house, it looks like a block. But it will typically be finished with a plaster. Yeah.
And that plaster is... That plaster is the lime plaster.
Yeah.
So you cannot have a hempcrete block and then you go about using traditional...
No.
It diffuses. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Okay. So you'd use a lime or a clay plaster on it. Because otherwise all of the wonderful benefits of the hempcrete block, as I was explaining earlier... the kind of moisture buffering benefits are lost if you sealed it with like a conventional, like modern plaster. So yeah, the lime or the clay. And I mentioned the hemp blocks, they're really insulative as well. So that's why, from a building standpoint, but that's where I'll see them kind of going a bit more mainstream, because it's your insulation and it's your block as one. So it's your actual building structure, but it's also your insulation. So... Yeah, as we were saying, from a commercial sense, if you can skip out one part of that phase, it makes it more viable for a builder or a developer.
That makes sense. So now we understand what a hempcrete looks like.
Yeah.
What a lime looks like. What does a finish looks like, if we could go back on it again? So is it a finish that you can point out from a distance to say this is actually built with hempcrete, and this isn't.
Yeah, absolutely. I think most people with kind of a keen eye would be able to spot it. You can, especially if you're looking up close, you can see kind of like the woody stalk of the hemp plant within the block, for instance. Just like you would with a concrete block, and you could see like the bits of stone within the concrete.
Yes.
Yeah, looking close, you can see like the woody parts of the hemp. So yeah.
And is it heavy?
No, they're light. They're really light. So yeah, yeah. The hemp itself turns up in big bales, so they're that super light. And they're the blocks. Yeah, they're typically a lot lighter than a concrete block. So
would you be able to do traditional things like putting things on a wall, hanging?
Yeah.
Heavy yeah. things on a wall as usual.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. You can screw straight into them. Right. Right. Yeah.
It's quite strange that it's not very popular then, because if all of this, it seems to me that it is quite close to traditional build.
Yeah.
I must admit, I was actually thinking about my grandmother's house.
Yeah.
Which is done with the clay when I first
saw it
in an earth.
And then
you've got bamboos. And then they use their hand and build it.
Yeah.
And then they use thatch. I mean, that is proper natural, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So where is this? Where's your grandma's?
Ghana.
Oh, wow, okay.
You know, years and years back.
When, that's proper natural.
Yeah, that is proper natural.
Yeah.
You know, and then there were natural people that are able to build those houses. That, you know, kind of, it is died out. So there isn't any of those builders there anymore, because we've moved on to, you know, we've run away from the natural things that was keeping us healthy to the non.
That'll come back round. Yeah, sure,
So that's what I was sort of alluding to. That why would I not use it? Why would I not have a, you know, apart from obviously the cost that maybe competitively not priced.
Yeah,
because you are. It's almost like you are comparing, you know, chalk and cheese.
Yeah.
You know, so if you were building with hempcrete all the way through, then you want to have the full benefits of having a sustainable house with all the benefits that it comes with it. If you were looking to build, you know, cost as the main value or the main base, then this may not be as at the cost of it, even though it may cost you something more later down the line in terms of health and all the other stuff, the upfront cost is slightly more.
Yeah, right now they are, but again, everything's supply and demand. The more common they use, the costs are coming down. We're seeing it now with like just hemp insulation, not in the hempcrete. That's kind of coming down all the time at the moment because they're manufacturing and producing a lot in the UK. Mm. So, but the hemp blocks at the moment, they are more expensive than a conventional, like if you say a block and block house.
Yes.
But again, the more people are using them, I think those costs will start coming down quite rapidly.
Mm. And how great is it to be at the forefront of that, right? To be sort of getting in really early in an industry or a sort of subsector of the industry that's sort of really growing in that way and genuinely really exciting. And are there any sort of big developments on the horizon, either locally or that you know about nationally, that are going to be using these type of materials?
Yeah. So I think we're probably all aware of the Human Nature development in Lewis.
Mm.
A majority of that will be built with hempcrete.
Wow.
If all planning goes through and they're able to start
Thursday, as planned. They've got another planning meeting on Thursday, haven't they?
Yeah. So that's one of the primary materials they want to use in this development.
Yeah.
Which is fantastic. Because I was probably, like a lot of people, I was quite sceptical when I very first went and saw their kind of public review when 3 years ago or so down at the Phoenix. I thought it probably would just be a normal development with maybe a air source heat pumps and some solar. But I went in and I was blown away. It was all the materials that I would love to build with.
Mm.
They were all on display.
Mm.
And that's when it's the real deal.
Brilliant.
Yeah, it's the real deal. It's so that's locally. And then, nationally, I know there's been some big... in Norfolk, there's been some hempcrete developments. It's really exciting to have one kind of in the town that I love and grown up in and still reside in now. So, just hopefully it happens and good luck for him on Thursday, I suppose. Yeah,
exactly. And Yeah, and further down the line, yeah, it'd be such an asset for the town, isn't it? Once it,
yeah,
you know, if and when it like finally gets off the ground.
Yeah, absolutely.
They've got their work cut out with them for them with the National Park. Yeah. It's the planning authority, haven't they?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I've been hearing.
Have they put the trees back?
Yeah. Yeah, the trees.
That was one of the main issues, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. So I don't.
The causeway trees.
I know one of them for sure because it's right next to our yard. Well, there's two there that are definitely now staying.
Right.
I don't know how that affects their plans. I don't really know the ins and outs of it. But I think.
I mean, there was serious uproar about it, wasn't there?
Yeah. Apparently, there's going to be 30,000 druids amassing to Lewis. Yeah. That's what I heard, yeah.
For the causeway trees.
Yeah. That would have been a bit of a sight.
I thought the Pells was a bit of an oversight because there's quite a bit of overshadowing there, wasn't there?
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think it'd be great for the town. Personally, I think it's a fantastic thing.
Yeah, it will. Yeah. And to show a large-scale development can be done in a natural and sustainable way.
Mm.
It's an absolute win. Because if they're showing that it can be done that way and people want to live in those houses, and I think once people start going in and seeing and recognising the value of being in those houses and letting out that big exhale that I talked about earlier, it's only going to encourage more people. I think it'd be amazing for the town. Yeah, I really do. Yeah. Not just from a natural building aspect, but just that whole area, you know. I spend a lot of time down there. Our yard's there. It's they've really helped us out with that. It's been fantastic. But it's dilapidated. It's really, really run down. It has been for years.
Mm-hmm.
It was sad to see with the previous development because the developers came down and they cut down some trees and made a load of mess and smashed up a load of asbestos roofs and then disappeared. And it's just...
Was that to secure planning?
I believe so. Or to secure some funding,
to make
I'd imagine.
A start, isn't it?
Yeah.
So that you get your 3 years to make a start, don't you? So
yeah.
That's why quite often developers do that, and they just knock it down and leave it.
Rip down the art hole and escape.
Yeah, they did. And Zoo Studios was there, which was great fun.
Yeah.
Say about some stories in Lewis, Nick. There was some there back in the day. So it was Zoo Studios used to be on the... they've had a bit of a tough run with developers, to be fair, because they had a... It was a bit of an artist community down there, and they used to have some awesome parties, some really, really good parties there. And then they were the people that took over above the bus station.
Mm-hmm.
So Zoo Cafe, and then the developers there moved them on. I mean, they're just getting chased around Lewis now. I don't know where they're going to go next.
Where are they now?
I don't know. I don't think they've got a permanent residence. Yeah. I saw that they were at the Railway Land Festival the other week.
Did they have a
I think they had a little stall, yeah. Okay.
And then also down, I know it's a different lot, but on North Street,
at
the old fire station there, there's a sort of hippie community that have been there for donkey's years.
The pop-up.
They've been there, 10 years or something, or however long.
Yeah, 10 years at least, yeah.
And, they've got... It's a beautiful setup there, isn't it, with the sort of, like, vegetable patch and the garden and all of that.
They're composting
they throw some good parties as well, don't they?
Yeah.
There's some loud parties down there.
It's a nice community. It's... so it'd be sad to kind of lose that element of it, of the Phoenix.
But then
I hope it retains in some way.
Yeah, it feels like the sort of development that would be able to retain that.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
The people, do they go there or do they live there?
So the people we're talking about live there at the moment in sort of temporary type accommodation. What they bring to the area is... just that sort of free spirit and that sort of that artistic and very sort of free lifestyle, throwing parties, being creative, having like music events and community type events. And the development that is being described in human nature sort of feels compatible with that. I don't know if they could, they probably will move these people on, but
they will do.
But in terms of you know, the venues that are going to be provided there and all that sort of thing, it couldn't be further away from the kind of initial Santon proposals that were around, you know, 10, 15 years ago, something like that.
Yeah.
God, I forget how long it was.
Yeah.
And it'll be interesting to see what happens with the water side as well, and having an extra bridge and making sort of more of that side of
I'm really excited to see that. The river's so underutilised in Lewis, isn't it? The town's kind of turned its back on it a little bit. Mm. So, yeah, it'd be really nice to open that up and make it a bit more of a public walkway.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
It's a bit easier to throw eggs and flour. Because at the moment, you stand on the Phoenix Causeway, don't
you? Yeah, true. Yeah, the raft race will get a lot more interesting, won't it? Yeah.
So for a community like that, when we went to Copenhagen, there is a place similar to that which has been going on for, I think it's called Christendom or Christenthing. I cannot really remember exactly what. So it is kind of a bunch of hippies and who have been living like that for years.
I've heard about that. Yeah. Isn't it an independent community?
And there are quite a few, you know, that you could, you know, go there and you could, you know, they sell marijuana.
Marijuana's legal in that community, isn't it?
In the heart of Copenhagen.
And it's got artistic. And when we go there, it was really recommend that we go inside, but we couldn't go inside because there have been a lot of fight going on between people that, you know, that sell the marijuana because other community, other people are, you know, sort of sweeping it like everything else, you know, the entire kind of if you like, idea behind it, you know, natural, like, you know, having something unique.
Yeah.
People, there's been a bit of a gang around it. But this one reminds me a little bit of that. Not in a large scale like that.
Yeah.
In a way. So.
Well, maybe that's it if the planning permission doesn't go through. We just set up our own little independent community down there. Yeah, nice.
What is very interesting about this, what you're doing? I mean, obviously, I love values-led companies and most of all companies that have really, you know, kind of changed the status quo and gone for it, you know, is always led by an individual with a dream, who wanted to take that on. I mean, it's such, like, one of us said it earlier, such a brave thing to obviously want to do. How has it have any personal toil on yourself in terms of trying to be innovative, trying to bring something so unique into the building industry? 30,000 houses, very small in the grand scheme of things. For that is quite unique also. You know, taking on the natural builder site atmosphere.
It's also
a very brave thing to do. So what challenges have you faced and how have you overcome them?
Yeah, I suppose to me, it didn't ever really particularly feel brave. It just felt like the right thing to do. So even though I know it was quite unique, it was always just quite a natural path to go down, if you know what I mean. Challenges, I suppose, it was tough to make money doing construction because we were doing something unique, and perhaps we were kind of up against, or not like competing, but, you know, we would be approached by clients who maybe engaged a couple other builders were a little bit more conventional. Mm-hmm. So it was we had to kind of sell ourselves on three different fronts almost to show that this is the value and this is why you're doing it. And I think we probably, and I certainly put a lot of time into making the build more natural or more sustainable in the early stages and didn't ever get paid for that. And some projects didn't ever happen because of that as well, because I think a little bit of my stubbornness wanting to build only in a natural, sustainable way, we were trying to make tweaks and changes on projects that already got design. That was a big challenge. Mm. So then I'd kind of almost be going back to the architect. I'd have the client's backing because I'd done the sale to the clients. The clients were on board. Mm. But then having to maybe go back to the architect or something and saying, or then the structural engineer and saying, okay, this is how we want to build it. And then a couple of times the projects didn't start because of that. We were unpicking a lot of work where in the ideal circumstance, they would have come to us or a sustainably minded architect from the get go, because it's so essential and so it's got to be an intrinsic part of the design from like the
word go.
Yeah, from the word go. Right. Yeah, I learned that and I learned that the hard way. Yeah, so that was a real challenge. But now, because of that and because of my journey through natural building, being a contractor, this is how I work now. I just do consultation with other architects or builders, and I'm engaged at an early stage, so I'm helping them with the design. So rather than putting loads of my time, energy and stressing myself out trying to make these changes, I'm like, okay, now I can get paid for this and help the design at an early stage. And then because we've stepped away from being the main contractor, which I think has actually been a real positive and will be a positive for the industry. As I said, I think we're going to have a bigger impact doing it this way, because now my focus is just on using the natural materials that I like. We can now offer our services to six different building contractors. So it won't taking on like a clay plastering project within the scope of a bigger project isn't going to be so daunting for a builder. Because if you're a conventional builder and your client doesn't necessarily want a whole natural or sustainable house, but they really want some clay plastering done, a builder now knows they can come to us and we can do that service. So it's all about little bits of impact rather than trying to change a whole big house or do a 700 house development. It's just doing little swaps, like putting a natural fibre insulation rather than a petrochemical insulation perhaps, or doing a clay plaster rather than a gypsum plaster. It's just those little tweaks can make, and if everyone got on board maybe with a little tweak, just a little bit of a natural building element and brought that into the home, we'll have a much bigger impact as a whole, rather than a few like handful of individuals trying to be like complete evangelists and doing it all the right way by themselves. Do you know what I mean? It's yeah. So I'm hoping we'll have a bigger impact that way.
There are just really last question to add to this is from myself is the mindset of consumers.
Yeah.
Because we are always being, you know, sort of bombarded with finding the best deal.
Yeah.
You know, the approach isn't necessarily what is best for you, it's what is most cost effective for you. And because of that mindset, consumers are naturally geared towards going, you know, and never ask questions about what materials are you using. You know, if you hire a builder, you really just 9 times out of 10, I think, are going for the what colour of paint you really want on the walls, rather than actually you understanding what cement and building materials are in there. So I think this really will be so helpful, not for me as well, really understanding that there is a real difference in terms of choosing a sustainable material in doing a project. And I hope that maybe our listeners get to understand and find a bit more about materials they use for.
But it's all about awareness, isn't it? Mm. So thank you very much. Very grateful for you letting me on and just blabbering on a little bit about natural material, about what I love. Right. Because I think our job and our responsibility as natural builders or people that kind of have this information and know how to build in a slightly different way, in a way that's slightly, it's more positive and more healthy for people in the planet, we've got to raise the awareness. It's kind of now my obligation, I suppose, to raise the awareness. Because as you say, like nine times out of 10, people don't know there's an alternative. So, yeah, if everyone over the next kind of 10 years, like I say, just made a little change in their building project, well, yeah, I think we'll make a big impact.
I can't recall if you told us the name of your new...
It's called company. Unearthed.
Unearthed.
Yeah. Okay.
And do you have a website?
Not yet.
Okay.
I'll have to share that when I do.
Yeah, do.
It's it's actually only my second week of trading in the company.
Congratulations.
So it's the second week of trading.
Unearthed.
Yeah. So it's been a funny couple of weeks. It's been really sad to say goodbye to Kind, but it was the natural transition, and I've unearthed my real passion of building with clay and lime and stone. That's like my big learning that I've come out of Kind. And then obviously we're using the materials from the earth.
Great name.
Thank you very much. Yeah.
And Jules, it's been an absolute pleasure.
Yeah,
to
thank
have you.
You
on. Thank you very much.
Thanks for inviting me on. Yeah, really enjoyed it. So thank you.
Thank you.
Very grateful.
We hope you have enjoyed this episode of Chalk It Up. And if you did, please subscribe, leave a review, and share it with friends and family. You can also follow us on Instagram at Chalk It Up Sussex Podcast, where you can find exclusive content, including video footage of some of our shows. Thank you for listening.